first love formed in the heart of the sun, raised from the dust of our days, learned from the error of our ways. Oh, is this love?
Greetings, listeners. It is January 29th, 2017, and thank you for being so patient. We are The Real Thing, exclusively on morelikeradio.com. My name is Mark Nixon. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Chris Wetton. Chris Wetton, how are you?
That's it, man. Game over.
What's up, man?
Not much. I am very, very interested in getting right to it, simply because we've got so much stuff to talk about, including the last 3 weeks for the box office. And so, as always, you can follow us on The Real Thing on Facebook and on Twitter, thereelthingmlr. For the last time that we were here, and we'll just go in order super quick, what was the movie that beat Rogue One, finally knocked it out of the top spot?
What was it?
That was Hidden Figures.
It always goes like that.
It's so weird, right? Like,
yeah.
Just something that you would never expect. But Hidden Figures was your number one movie for January 13th, 2017. Split has been the champ for the last 2 weeks, because it actually grossed $40 million last weekend, and this recent weekend it grossed $26 million, which...
Yeah, it dropped like 36%, which is unheard of in this day and age.
It's not bad. Not bad, considering that M. Night Shyamalan's track record as of late hasn't been exactly the most stellar.
Well, and this movie was made for like $5 to $10 million, apparently. Like,
really?
Total budget, like, max was, with marketing and everything, was like $10 million. So it's just like raking in profit right now.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So, yeah, and his track record with the movies... with the quality of the movies, but also with box office, has been shit for quite a while.
Right, right. Now, I do have to mention that I haven't seen any M. Night Shyamalan movie since... my God, has it been The Village? I haven't seen anything since then.
Let's go through his chronology.
Let's go through his movies.
So it starts with Sixth Sense.
Yes.
You know,
and everybody's seen that.
Worldwide phenomenon.
Of course.
Unbreakable, considered by many to be his best movie, although not, you know, as widely praised as Sixth Sense was. But among fanboys, huge following.
Of course.
Do you like Unbreakable?
I did like Unbreakable. In fact, there was talk about a sequel.
The movie came out, there was talk about... I mean, and it is, like, perfect for a sequel. Like, it sets up a sequel that you want to see.
Oh, of course. And, you know, truth be told, probably as good of a superhero movie as you can get, if you really think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, sort of, kind of strangely, a superhero movie based in reality before Chris Nolan did his Dark Knight thing.
Yeah.
In a weird way. Like, not totally based in reality, but mostly based in reality with just some supernatural elements in there.
Yeah, very nuanced, very low-key.
Yeah.
Signs, 2002?
Signs. I like Signs.
That's all right.
I mean, it was kind of the last big Mel Gibson star turn, you know?
The Village, 2004?
That's where we start to sort of fall off a cliff, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's where it starts to get a little... And actually, The Village even started off, like, the first 30 minutes of the movie's like, oh, whoa, this is creepy as shit, and then... And then he starts to get into where his problem was as a filmmaker, I think, is that it was always about the twist.
Right.
And he wanted so badly for this twist to be a Sixth Sense type moment that the rest of the movie suffered.
Right.
You know?
God, what was the twist in that one? There was just a separate town right off the highway or something like that.
Whole twist is that you are watching this movie thinking that it's taking place, you know, in
the 15th century,
1500s or something like that.
Yeah,
then come to find out, you know, they're in some preserve or something like that.
Some commune.
Yeah.
Lady in the Water in 2006.
That's when we really just, like, the fucking... goddamn plane has crashed into the mountain here. Like, and with Giamatti, you know, like, oh, wasted.
Yeah, and then he's got Bryce Dallas Howard as his muse for those last two films mentioned. So what was the twist in this one? I'm sorry, by the way. Spoilers if you haven't seen any of
these. I'm not sure what the twist in Lady in the Water was. Like, I barely remember it. Like, I've sort of, like, tucked it away. Like,
forgettable.
Like, as if I was molested, you know? Like, right. It's way, like, deep in there, and I don't want to remember.
Right, but it's forgettable. That's not a good feeling to have when you are, you know, watching a movie where... You know, you like Sixth Sense is obviously, you know,
right,
one of the most popular movies of all time. But, man, I couldn't tell you anything about that. I couldn't tell you anything about The Happening with Mark Wahlberg.
I can only tell you that there's lots of great YouTube compilations of Mark Wahlberg's, like, terrible acting in that movie. Did you ever see The Happening?
No, I haven't seen anything since The Village.
Oof.
Because based on all the reviews from Lady in the Water and The Happening and... Jesus, The Last Airbender, like, I don't care about any of that sort of thing. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with it, but, you know, there was just...
No.
There's nothing to it to compel me to watch it.
Everybody was sort of sick of him and trying to... And the thing is, you know, Sixth Sense and Unbreakable, he was kind of doing his own thing, and even in Signs. And then he started trying to get into this thing where it was like, my identity as a filmmaker is that I, you know, pull the rug out from under your feet and I fuck with you, and... It just didn't work. Like, you just can't... That can't be your raison d'etre every single time.
Well, sure. Know? How about After Earth?
Didn't see it. I'm like you at this point. Like, once we got to Last Airbender, which always sounds like a, you know, a way of farting to me. Like, it sounds like a movie about farting.
I could probably name off a couple... Damon the American Dream could be the Last Airbender.
That was a good airbender. Yeah.
Just get some chili in him.
After Earth, didn't see it. That's with most of the country. I did not see it.
Catastrophically, budget was $130 million. Box office was $244 million. But all the reviews, again, just I don't care.
Yeah, nobody gave a shit.
The Visit in 2015?
I didn't see The Visit, but it did start to get like a little bit of like, people were like, oh, okay. A little bit of a return to form for him. You know, stripped down, low budget, kind of scary movie.
This is where your point is coming up. That movie was made for $5 million and made close to $100 million.
And I think the thing is, he can't get a movie for $100 million budget anymore. Like, I think that the studios were, after a couple of these movies, were like, nah.
Right.
Like, even the fact that After Earth made 200 or whatever you just said, like, that surprises me because it's widely considered to be a bomb. And that's got to include foreign markets and all that kind of stuff. Domestically, it made very, very little.
And Split was actually made for $9 million and $57 million so far. And so you actually got to see Split.
Yeah, I saw Split the other night.
Okay.
Yeah. I liked it. I mean, I got to say, like, I was pleasantly surprised, mostly because James McAvoy, who I've never given two shits one way or the other about...
Really?
He's fine. Like, I don't dislike him, but I've never been, like, you know, as Professor X or whatever, like, it's fine, or...
You've seen Sunshine, though. Like, was he in that movie as well?
Was he in Sunshine?
And then there was another one, it's the one that Brian Castagneto always wants me to watch, because Rosario Dawson's completely naked in it. Trance?
Oh, Trance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's fine. And Filth, you know, like, all of the
that
movies
one, yeah.
are sort of okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. Didn't think... But this one... He really is kind of chewing up the scenery as a sort of a bad guy with 23 personalities, and you get to see him playing multiple different personalities.
Do you get to see all 23 of them?
I don't think they hit 23, but you see enough of them to get the picture, and, you know, there's sort of some moments where you get to see glimpses of each one of them in rapid succession and stuff like that when certain things occur, you know,
okay.
without getting into spoiler territory here because you haven't seen the movie.
No,
that's not, you know, the fact that he's got 23 personalities is not a spoiler. Like, that's in the previews.
No, of course. And just to break it down, the premise is that this person with all these multiple personalities kidnaps sibling set of girls, these sisters.
I don't know if they're sisters. I think it's just three chicks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Three chicks, two of which are friends, and the third of which is the girl from The Witch.
Correct.
Anna Taylor-Joy, I think her name is.
Okay.
And she's sort of different from the other two in that she's not part of this friend group, and she's a little bit different. And again, that is revealed in the opening scene of the movie, that she is not part of their friend group, so no spoilers there.
Okay.
But... and you also see from the opening scenes of the movie that she reacts to this whole situation very differently than the rest of them do. It's apparent from the moment he steps into the car that she has a completely different reaction. And the movie sort of goes on from there. It's mostly a very stripped down, kind of a B-movie horror movie, just about this killer who's kidnapped these girls.
Yeah.
And the way they go about being his, you know, the way he goes about tormenting them and the way that they deal with it. And the story kind of unfolds from there.
Okay.
Whether they do or do not get out of this situation.
Okay.
Kind of a suspense, psychological thriller.
Would this be, I mean, obviously, money aside, would you consider this to be a return to form as far as his filmmaking prowess that he had before and he just kind of lost it and now he's got it back?
Yes.
Somehow, some way?
Yeah, I do think so, because it has what Unbreakable had and it has what The Sixth Sense had, which is simplicity.
Okay.
To quote Hannibal Lecter. It is just nothing too fancy. No crazy convoluted twists and turns. It does have some surprises here and there, but it's not like, you don't get the sense that he's hinging the story on these twists and turns. The story develops kind of organically.
Okay.
And it's kind of stripped down. When he got into trouble was when he started doing The Village and Lady in the Water and stuff. And it's like, well, this is not exactly a horror movie. So what are these twists and turns? I feel like you've pulled up the rug from under me for no reason other than just to do that. You know, like the story then, after you see that one turn, doesn't hold any value anymore with those movies.
Let me read a quote now that you're pointing that out, because apparently after the release of Village, Michael Agger from Slate had noted that Shyamalan was following, quote, an uncomfortable pattern of, quote, making fragile sealed-off movies that fell apart when exposed to outside logic.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't get me wrong, Split is not perfect. Like, it is certainly ridiculous from, like, a human perspective.
Sure.
Like, we all know that, you know, split personality is kind of a trope that's been used in thrillers going back 30, 40 years, probably. It's a famous sort of defense that's used in court cases and stuff to very little success, generally. Split personality is like something that you see about on movies and on Maury Povich, but not really present that much in reality, and certainly not present very often with 23 distinct personalities. And some, it's very useful as a mechanism in a thriller, but not a lot of realism in this movie.
Gotcha.
And also they sort of, and again, they get into this in the preview, like, you know, he can actually change. Some of these different personalities have different levels of strength and can change their form and things like that. And that's kind of what they get into in the preview. And later on in the movie, more about that is revealed. But
it's hard, though. Like, I feel like you want to tell me more.
I do want to say more, but yeah. I'm kind of trying to stick to the stuff that is revealed in the previews. Because, like I said, the movie does have some twists and turns and surprises. But the big twist in the movie is not a twist. It's not it's a kind of a cherry on top, as opposed to being a twist that the entire story hinges on. In other words, you can watch the movie, and if you liked it, this twist that you get at the very end is something that is only going to accentuate your liking of the movie. If you didn't like the movie, the twist is not going to change your mind.
Right. It's not a make or break moment, though.
Not a make or break moment, but it's a different kind of twist, and it was actually very, very... I was already enjoying the movie, again, mostly because of McAvoy's performance, which is a lot of fun.
Okay.
But then once you get this moment in the closing scenes of the... really, the closing seconds of the movie, it kind of gets you excited about the movie all over again.
Okay.
And I can't really say much more than that, but...
No, I know. We appreciate the candor, and, you know, obviously listeners are the real thing. If it's being recommended by Chris, you know that it's probably going to be a good movie, because I did have interest in watching it. Especially when, you know, again, I don't want to go into just relying heavily on reviews or whatnot, but, you know, when it's got, like 65-75%.
I think it's like 78 or something like that. Yeah. This movie's got like decent reviews.
Yeah. And so, you know, good on him. Finally, he's figured it out, because he's been the writer for all these screenplays for all of his movies. And so.
And in my opinion, that was part of the problem with the last several movies. But in this one, he plays it smart and he keeps it simple and he keeps it fun.
Yeah.
And again, not all the reviews are glowing. If you go on Rotten Tomatoes, especially among the top critics, there's plenty of rotten reviews on there. And these are people that are either just jaded to him or just are taking the movie too seriously. It's kind of meant to be fun, I think.
Gotcha.
as much fun as a, you know, serial killer torturing young girls can be.
Ah, you know.
Fun in the sense that the later Nightmare on Elm Street movies or other of those type slasher movies are fun. Like, it's gotcha. Fun to be scared and creeped out by someone who's just such a good villain.
Well, as we move on The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, let's get right to it, because we were actually going to do the show last week.
Right.
But then we waited because Tuesday morning, the Oscar nominations were announced for 2016. And so, do you agree with sticking with the five or over nomination?
Do I agree with the part where Best Picture has 5 to 10?
Yes.
And then all the other categories have only 5?
Correct.
I don't know. I kind of liked it better when we only had 5.
Okay.
I don't...
They're switching it back, though. I thought that that was...
Are they?
I thought they were contemplating it, at least.
I think they should. The whole reason they did this was to sort of open up the field and have more movies in this category, kind of be more encompassing of popular movies and things like that, right? Yeah, what we all heard back in the day?
Yeah, like The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight was how this arose.
Correct.
Right? Like, I mean, just the way we have so many minority... nominees this year. There was another backlash 10 years ago as a result of The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
I would argue more important. just kidding.
No.
Well,
it is interesting that you say that, because in every single major category, there are minorities represented in their respective...
Yeah. There are more minority nominees this year than any prior year in the major categories.
So your Best Picture nominees are Arrival, Fences, which you have seen or you have not
seen? I've not seen Fences.
No. Hacksaw Ridge you have.
Yeah.
Hell or High Water we both have.
Yep.
Hidden Figures I have not.
I saw it.
La La Land we have.
Yep.
Lion.
Nope.
I have not.
Nope.
Manchester by the Sea you have.
Yes.
And then Moonlight we both have, because I actually just watched that before you came over.
Right.
And so, you know what? I'm going to get just a quick review, because obviously we can't get into every single movie, because you've seen a bunch of movies.
Yeah, but a lot of movies we've already talked about. We talked about La La Land. We talked about Manchester by the Sea and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and Hell or High Water.
Yeah.
I would think that, as far as Moonlight is concerned, it was an all right movie. It was okay. But if you're getting into lauding it for being one of the best movies of the year... I'm a little lukewarm on it, only because.
Are you ever gonna want to see it again?
No, it's okay. Look, I know what you were talking about, where the last third of the movie falls apart, and it's the story of an African American boy that, you know, you see him grow up, kind of like Boyhood, but it's not, you know, over a course of like several years.
Three acts, as a little boy, as a young man, and then as a man.
Yeah, and he's in Liberty City in South Florida in Miami, and so he's surrounded by drugs, he's surrounded by, you know, the fact that he is homosexual, or that it is implied that he is homosexual.
Sure.
And so, I don't know, like, it's not, the movie was not off-putting, because you were bringing up the point that if I watch Requiem for a Dream or that type of movie, like, I got to step away from it and not watch it for a couple of years and that sort of thing. I didn't get that with this, but also it felt kind of, I don't know, it was really, really just, I don't want to say lazy, but it was just kind of like, you know, chilled out.
It was very uncreative. I get what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, I get what they're doing, and that is creative, which is you're trying to examine what makes a person who they are over, you know, like these different periods in their life.
Yeah.
And these things in this period led to this, and that led to that, and that led him to be who he is at the end. But
right.
What you end up with is, number one, a character that's not that interesting, and number two, an overall movie that's a little bit sterile and doesn't have much feeling or emotion to it. It almost feels like some sort of, like, science examination or something like that.
I was listening to an interview on NPR where I guess Barry Jenkins, the director, who's also nominated for Moonlight for Best Director, and they were talking about this specific class that is in a Miami public school, and they use primarily the children that are in that class as the majority of the cast for Moonlight, which was really, really interesting. But also, it was just, I don't know, like, I give it props, and I give it the merit that, you know, they were able to make this movie, and it's obviously being lauded. You know, it was kind of up there with Manchester by the Sea as far as being nominated for Best Drama for the Golden Globes.
Yes.
But it wasn't anything that I haven't seen before, and it wasn't told, and like you were saying, it's not really told in a way that kind of like pulls at my heartstrings. Like, yeah, I get that he's, you know, he's gay and he's going through that, and it's about pain, it's about how you grow up. But at the same time, I don't know, like it was almost kind of like going through the motions.
Absolutely. So, no, that's 100% how I feel about it, and I know Brian, our friend online, sort of felt in a similar way about it too.
Yeah. Like, I kind of wanted to like it more, but they weren't giving me a reason to.
No. You take out the fact that he's a black gay kid, and we've never really seen a movie about a black gay kid, and I'm glad someone's making a movie about
a black gay kid. Absolutely, yeah, of course. Yeah.
But you take that little element out of it, and you're not left with a very interesting movie. He's not an interesting character. I frankly am not terribly interested in the romance between the two characters in the third act. Why? I don't know. They didn't develop it. Like, well, he jerked him off on the beach. Like, that was it. Like, you know, spoiler alert.
Well, no, but no, but I get it. Like, he finds him again, and it just ends. It just stops.
Right.
And there's nothing... Again, it goes into... Nocturnal Animals, for example. You want me to care about Amy Adams and her plight with, you know, such and such Jake Gyllenhaal and all that sort of thing. But when it just ends, there's no closure to it, and you're not giving me an investment in order to care about these characters.
Right.
And it should be very, very easy for me to care about a character, especially if it's a, you know, a young black gay kid.
Yeah. But you're a young black gay kid. Yeah, well, you know. The movie was made for you.
So when you're giving all these performances, and there's a lot of people in here, I was looking at, like, Janelle Monáe. I don't know if you've ever listened to her music at all.
Yeah, I was, like, actually, like, struck by how fucking gorgeous she was. I had to run off to IMDb to figure out who she was, and then I realized it was Janelle Monáe. I'm like, holy shit.
And Naomi Harris is in it, Mahershala Ali. Both those last two have been nominated for their respective fields for supporting roles.
Naomi Harris, though, I gotta say, like, those are... And we'll get to the more nominations in a minute, but that's exactly the kind of nomination... That, to me, feels like, didn't we already give someone, and that is, what's her name, Monique, an Academy Award for doing literally the exact same thing?
Yeah.
It's like if all of a sudden this year we were going to nominate Kevin Spacey for playing Tom Cruise's autistic older brother that's been living in a mental institution. Like, whoa.
Right.
Somebody already did that, and we already said it was great. Now, this person's just coming along doing the exact same thing.
Like, yeah.
It's definitely, it's fine. Like, yeah, you're a crack addict and, you know, all this sort of stuff, and you're shitty to your kid, and you're an abusive parent, and then you learn in the end, and we're going to give her an Academy Award for it. Now, the movie had great performance. By the way, Mahershala Ali, like, he's great.
He is really good.
He's
very underrated.
He's in it for, like, 16 minutes.
So was Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight.
True, and Michelle Williams in Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, she was nominated
less
as well.
Less time than that.
Yeah. But, you know, and, oh God, who the hell is that one actor? He's in The Nick. Have you seen The Nick?
Yeah, I saw the first season of The Nick. I don't know what his name is, but he's the guy that jerked off the main character on the beach. Yeah.
Yes, that is correct.
Well, not that actor, but that character in the movie.
He's really good in it as well.
It's gotta be weird as a young actor to be...
Andre Holland,
yes. Okay. Very good on The Nick, and very good in this movie.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, like, I don't want to sound like I disliked Moonlight. I didn't dislike it. I thought the third act didn't quite come together, but...
It was incomplete. That's how I felt with it. It was just, you know, like, give me something more. The mood set is really, really good.
No doubt.
And the soundtrack, cinematography, all that sort of thing, but, you know, it goes back into story. Like, you gotta give me a story, you just can't give me half of a story, and expect me to feel a way about half a story than you would if you actually, like, kind of, you know, churn this relationship between, you know, Andre Holland and what's his name, so...
I try not to fall prey to this, but you kind of can't help it. I can't help but feel that the movie was sort of overpraised and overhyped prior to me seeing it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, don't you think that has to have affected your feelings? Like, it's like the movie that's on the most top 10 lists of the entire year, you know? And I try not to fall prey to that. I try to walk into every movie, but I can't help but feel like this is the kind of movie that Hollywood loves, but the rest of the country is going to watch this thing. And don't get me wrong, there's gonna be people in Kansas that are going to rent this when it comes out on demand, and they're going to watch it and be like, what the fuck did I just watch? You know, like...
Not their target demo?
No, but like, yeah, everybody's going to hear about it. It's going to win some Academy Awards, and people are going to be like, well, let's give it a shot.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he's jerking this kid off on the beach. Like, what the hell's happening? And then the movie just ends, and it just doesn't, I don't know, it just didn't quite come together for me.
I mean, I'll tell you this much. It's the fourth movie that I've seen as far as the Best Picture nominees, because I've seen Arrival, I've seen Hell or High Water, I've seen La La Land. And if I were to pick from one to four, where it would be, it would be number four right now.
Yeah,
so
for me, this is towards the bottom of the list, yeah, too, of the nominees. And I kind of made this point on Facebook yesterday. Like, we're at a point where there are so few serious movies made for adults, you
sure.
know, that, you know, we get just bombarded with comic book movies and reboots and sequels and prequels and things like that.
Yeah.
When someone makes even the most pedestrian drama... And Moonlight's not pedestrian. Like, they're trying to do something different here.
It's okay. It's an okay movie.
Yeah. But Hidden Figures, for example, is so pedestrian. You know, if you watch it, it's not bad. But it's the kind of movie that your 8th grade history teacher would show you on the last day of school. You know, remember the last day of school? Like,
yeah,
there was never anything...
I'm popping in a tape. I'm not talking to these kids
anymore.
Yeah,
exactly. You walk in, it's the last day of school, everybody's all excited.
Yeah.
The TV's there with the strap on it, you know,
yeah,
like on the big stand. And he's going to pop in Hidden Figures, you know, like it's a historical drama that's not going to offend anybody, but it's all about, you know, like the struggle of these black ladies at NASA in the 60s, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's fine, but it's very pedestrian. You watch it and there's nothing sort of exciting about it in terms of filmmaking. It's a good story and the acting's whatever, it's fine. Like, they showed up and said their lines. Like, you know.
No, no. It's, yeah, of course. And, you know, funny that you mentioned that, because I was starting to watch that movie, and then I got sidetracked with something else. And it has Janelle Monáe.
It does have Janelle Monáe. And Mahershala Ali, also.
Oh, is he in there as well?
Yeah,
sweet.
Yeah. And you know, it's fine. Like, if you sit and watch it, you'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
You'll be like, that's interesting movie. I did not know this story.
Okay.
I did some, you know, Googling about the characters afterward because I was interested in the story. I didn't know anything about it.
Okay.
And so it's a nice little slice of history movie. But in terms of filmmaking, no. No. Like, it doesn't. Is it better than Deadpool? No.
No?
And I'm not one of these people that was arguing Deadpool needed to win all these awards and stuff. I'm not all butthurt because Deadpool didn't get a bunch of Academy Awards.
Yeah,
but
I was going to ask you, like, you know, there is 10 possible slots, and we only filled 9. Could you put Deadpool in that?
Deadpool would make a good joke about filling slots there.
He would.
No, but I mean, in 20 years, like, are we going to be talking about Hidden Figures? Or is Hidden Figures going to be on cable, or is Deadpool going to be on cable? It's probably going to be Deadpool.
Yeah. How about this? Best actor in a leading role. Casey Affleck for Manchester by the Sea. Mm-hmm. Andrew Garfield for Hacksaw Ridge. Ryan Gosling for La La Land. Viggo Mortensen for Captain Fantastic, of which I did download, so I'm going to watch that.
I want to see that.
Denzel Washington for Fences. So.
Yeah, man. It's all these young dudes. Like, if you go back 10 years and tell me that best actor is going to be Casey Affleck, Ryan Gosling, Andrew Garfield.
You know, the guy from the Mickey Mouse Club.
Yeah.
That guy.
And, you know, what's his name? from Lord of the Rings, you know?
You hedging your bets. I don't know if you've seen all of them or most of them, but as far as, like, best actor...
I've seen all of them except for Fences, I guess.
Out of the four, who would you say would probably have the best chance of winning, would you think?
I would say that it would be Casey Affleck,
okay. But
he's now getting a little backlash again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know. I'd probably... This one, best actor, in recent years, there's always somebody who's sort of the favorite.
Yeah.
And kind of gets... This has been a surprise category. It used to be, back in the day, best supporting actor and actress were sort of the surprise categories.
Right.
Like, you know, Michael Keaton doesn't win for The Birdman, or Mickey Rourke doesn't win for The Wrestler, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Things like that. I don't know if Casey Affleck's going to get this thing. I think it might end up going to Gosling or somebody like that. You know?
Gotcha. Yeah, it seems like, I mean, La La Land, what, tied the most nominations?
Tied or broke, 14. It's like,
13 or 14?
Shit.
Yeah, like I said, listen, I'm not a big musical guy, but when I watched it, I was like, this thing's going to win everything. It's going to get nominated for everything. It's going
to
win everything.
It's very enjoyable. But man, 14 nominations. Fucking Hollywood just does love to blow itself, doesn't it? Hollywood loves to give itself a hand job on the beach in Miami.
Well, let's talk about that very, very briefly. Because again, our friend Brian on our Facebook group, he's talking about how the reason why the Oscars were even conceived in the first place was to basically give Hollywood a pat on the back and, you know, like relish in its... you know, the pomp and circumstance of filmmaking and all that type of thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you know, when you're talking about, you know, movies that are going to be remembered 25, 35 years later, are you really going to be talking about Shakespeare in Love? Or are you going to talk about Saving Private Ryan, for example, in 97?
Right. Are we talking about Driving Miss Daisy, or are we talking about Goodfellas?
Yeah, of course. So, actor in a supporting role. Best actor in a supporting role. Mahershala Ali in Moonlight. Jeff Bridges in Hell or High Water. Lucas Hedges in Manchester by the Sea. Dev Patel in Lion. And Michael Shannon in Nocturnal Animals.
How about that?
I know, right?
How about that, Mr. Fung?
Mr. Aaron Taylor Johnson.
So, this is another thing that happens in Hollywood, which is the Golden Globes, like, again, like nominate Johnny Depp for The Tourist and things like that.
Yeah.
They nominate Aaron Taylor Johnson for Nocturnal Animals, who nobody was talking about.
Yeah.
Why did they nominate Aaron Taylor Johnson? Because he was good? No.
Because he's good looking?
Because he's good looking and he's British, and that's what the fucking Golden Globes do. They nominate lots of people that are not American, and they nominate the good looking people and the exciting, and also the stuff that they thought was going to be big. Okay. So what happens after that?
Yeah.
He wins the thing in a big surprise at the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
So then Entertainment Weekly and fucking everybody else starts putting Aaron Taylor Johnson in there into the to the predictions for the Oscar slot. Why? Because he was good? No. Because they're fucking Hollywood and they thought, and somebody else said so, so then they all believed it. That's what they do. Like, oh, well, they said he's good. He must be good. No, he fucking sucked. He was wiping his ass. Like, literally wiping his ass.
Pretty incorrectly, we need to reiterate on The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com.
So I feel vindicated that the good actor in the movie, the one actor who seemed to be fucking awake in that terrible movie, actually got nominated. And one of my favorite fucking actors, Michael Shannon. Two-time Oscar nominee, Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Yeah.
Talk about kick-ass.
Man.
Fuck Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Jeff Bridges versus Michael Shannon, I think, would probably be...
Oh.
But I don't know who Lucas Hedges is as Manchester by the Sea. I have yet to see that, but...
He's the young man that Casey Affleck, his nephew, goes back to sort of be the caretaker for, you know...
Oh, okay.
Godfather 2 or whatever.
So, yeah. But would it be...
He was also in that that one Wes Anderson movie, Moonrise Kingdom,
the
kids.
Oh, the little kid.
Yeah,
oh,
he was not the main little kid. He was one of the other little kids in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, he was in that, though.
So, but would you say that it's probably Bridges versus Shannon? As far as this category is concerned?
Oh, no, I think this is...
Mahershala Ali? Really?
I think so, because, number one, we nominated a bunch of black people this year, like, which is good. You know, they should have more diversity.
Sure.
But I don't think a lot of black people are going to win. Like, I don't think Moonlight's going to win a lot of shit.
Right.
Probably, because Hollywood loves to blow itself, and... sorry, black people, we're going to give you an award, but Gosling put on his tap shoes, so...
Yeah,
but Mahershala Ali is good as an actor, and he's very good in this movie, and I think he'll probably win it.
Okay, man, Dev Patel. Last thing that he was in that I remember was what, Slumdog Millionaire?
Yeah, I feel like he's been in a couple other things.
He's been in
small parts, but he hasn't had a part like this since Slumdog Millionaire.
Best actress in a leading role: Isabella Huppert for Elle, Ruth Negga for Loving.
Don't use that word, please.
And EGGA. I'm pronouncing it correctly. Natalie Portman for Jackie. Emma Stone for La La Land. That's probably going to be the lock. Meryl Streep for Florence Foster Jenkins. She broke her own record, so now she's been nominated more times than anybody in history.
Fucking Jackie is the most grating, obnoxious performance that Natalie Portman, who I like.
Yeah, yeah.
I've always liked Natalie Portman.
Okay.
I found her fucking watchable in this movie.
I take it that you've seen Jackie then.
I saw Jackie.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I saw it on the interwebs.
Okay.
And holy shit. God.
Is it that bad? Why is it that bad? What are you talking
about? She's doing this like breathy Jackie Onassis or Jackie Kennedy Onassis impression that I can't do, but that's what it feels like. It feels like an impression.
Okay.
Like she watched some B-roll of her on YouTube or something like that, and she's doing this. It sounds like a Marilyn Monroe impression is what it sounds like. And maybe Jackie Kennedy sounded like that. Yeah.
How ironic is that?
Yeah, I'm sure that somebody could make them both sound the same way, if you know what I'm saying.
Era. I have no comment for that era.
No, but it's just very, very sort of breathy, like, arrogant performance. Like, I could not stand it. I could not wait for the movie to be over.
Huh.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Who do you like in that?
Pretty big snub in this category this year. Two big snubs in this category this year.
Best actress, you mean?
Best actress.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who do
you
think?
Amy Adams for Arrival.
Yeah, yeah.
Snatch Portman's bony ass out of that category and drop Amy Adams' bony ass in there.
Right.
But also, no Annette Bening for 20th Century Women.
That was the other one that was pretty notorious for all the articles that I was watching, too.
No,
so.
Notorious. Yeah. No, like, everybody was picking Annette Bening to at least be one of the five.
If, sure.
You know, not necessarily to win it, but... And I saw 20th Century Women, and she makes that movie.
Like, really?
Oh, it's a star turn, you know? Like, mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's like Gene Hackman and Royal Tenenbaums. Like, the movie sort of revolves around her. It's got a lot of characters in it, but they all are sort of there because of their relationship with her. And she's hilarious. Like, her delivery of some of the lines is fantastic.
Well, she's always been very, very good. I mean, the last win that she got was for American Beauty, but that was way back in, 1997,
yeah, she was also in The Kids Are All Right a couple years ago. I think she got nominated that time, too. And it just reminds you what a great actress Annette Bening is.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't get nominated. Man, 20th Century Women didn't get nominated for anything, actually.
And, what's her name? Nega. Ruth Nega?
Yes.
Am I saying that correctly?
You are saying it correctly.
You don't pronounce the R. Well, there is no R.
There is no R.
Oh, I'm sorry. She, you know, Loving was, like, fine, right? Yeah. Like, but was she that great in it?
I haven't seen it. I couldn't say.
Let me answer my own question. She wasn't that great in it.
But from what I recall from the prior show that we talked about where you were reviewing Loving, and it's, you know, obviously directed by Jeff Nichols, and so you were saying that it was a good story. I'm glad it was brought to my attention. It's kind of along the lines of Hidden Figures, I would surmise.
Yeah, where it's, well, Loving's probably... Hidden Figures is actually probably more entertaining than Loving, and I liked Loving.
Yeah.
But it's like, after you see it, you don't think about it ever again.
Yeah.
And her performance is sweet, and certainly I would like to see her in some other stuff, but I don't think she did anything... It kind of... This is what's frustrating about the Oscars, and it goes back to what we were talking about Hollywood just doing it to congratulate themselves and things like that. And again, it also goes back to what we were talking about them trying to be more inclusive of minorities. You take out actresses who've gotten 5, 6, 7 nominations, like Amy Adams and Annette Bening, and you put in somebody like Ruth...
Nega.
N-word.
Yeah.
And then...
I'm not going to be scared to say it. Her last name is Nega. I'm saying it correctly. So there you go. On the real thing, I'm more like radio.com.
I just have a hard time saying that.
I know.
Without one in the room. Okay. I mean, with, you know...
A terrible, terrible person. But anyway,
no,
keep going.
She was great.
Yeah.
But she wasn't that great. You know, somebody turns in a performance like Annette Bening in 20th Century Women. I'm very surprised she's not here. But life goes on. She's probably getting, you know, gone down on by Warren Beatty as we speak.
Who is the lock for best actress in a leading role, would you say?
I do think that you're right about Emma Stone probably being the closest thing to a lock in this category.
Okay.
Right?
I mean, I'm calling it right now. I think that La La Land, with the exception of maybe like one or two categories here or there, like it's probably going to win at least eight
best
or nine.
Actor or something.
Yeah,
like
it's going to win. It's going to win a ton of shit.
Yeah.
So because it's, you know, self-aggrandizing, you know, congratulatory.
Very, very Hollywood.
Yeah.
But it's also charming, you know.
Of course.
Like,
yeah.
We should not shortchange La La Land just because it got 14 nominations. Like, it is easy to make that joke, and I'm totally making those jokes, but
it was in our...
We both loved the movie.
It was in both of our top tens when we spoke about it last week, or like a couple weeks ago.
Top three or some shit, right?
Yeah.
Like, for both of us. Like, it was a very enjoyable movie for me. I will totally be watching it again. As a matter of fact, I did watch part of it again.
Did you?
Yeah.
Nice. Best actress in a supporting role. Viola Davis for Fences, Naomi Harris for Moonlight, Nicole Kidman for Lion, Octavia Spencer for Hidden Figures, and probably what your choice is going to be, Michelle Williams for Manchester by the Sea.
Michelle Williams would be my personal choice. Again, have not seen Fences. I think a lot of people are saying that Viola Davis is the lock, is kind of the closest thing to a lock in this category.
Gotcha.
But I thought Michelle Williams was fantastic. I've always loved Viola Davis, too, so I'm very interested in seeing that movie. But I do feel like she's one of those actresses that, like, I feel like she's won 3 times before, and maybe she's never even been nominated. But you know what I mean? Like, we've been hearing her name as one of the greatest actresses alive for the last 20 years, but not necessarily sure that she's gotten her due. So, you know, if she wins it, fantastic.
Right. Let's check it out.
Did a bunch of Soderbergh movies, I think, was when I first sort of noticed her. She was in Solaris and Out of Sight, I think.
She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress for Doubt.
great movie, great performance.
And Best Actress for The Help.
Didn't win either one, though, right?
She did not.
Ironically, lost, well, not lost, but Octavia Spencer, her star in The Help, also nominated, won for The Help and is nominated this year for Hidden Figures.
And Miss Davis won for Fences for Best Supporting Actress at the Golden Globes this past year.
Right. And Emma Stone, also in The Help.
Yes,
she correct? Did.
Yes, oh, that's right. You're absolutely right, yes.
Yep. Weird.
That's so, weird. You know, we're just going to run, oh, here's the other category. The other category. Five major ones, right? Picture, actor, supporting actress, et cetera, et cetera. Directing.
Director.
Hacksaw Ridge.
This is interesting.
The
right?
return of Mel Gibson in a nominated...
Return of the Man.
Arrival, La La Land, Manchester by the Sea, and Moonlight.
So read them again. So Mel Gibson.
Mel Gibson. We've got Dennis Villeneuve.
Which is great. I love seeing his name on there.
We got Barry Jenkins from Moonlight.
Jenkins.
We've got Manchester by the Sea is...
Kenneth Lonergan.
And then La La Land is...
Damien Chazelle. So what's interesting about that category is the only real veteran there is...
Gibson.
Gibson.
That's crazy.
Sugar tits.
Yeah.
And the rest of them are all very much newcomers for the most part. You know, or if not newcomers, they might have been around for 10 or 12 years, but they've made very few movies.
Yeah, I don't...
Lonergan, I guess, has been around a little bit longer than that, but he's only made 3 movies.
You think Mel has a chance in this?
Oh, I don't think so.
No, I think Damien Chazelle?
I don't think so. Even if there was no sugar tits and the Jews started all the wars and all that kind of stuff, I still don't think he'd have a chance because you got a La La Land, which is, you know...
Right.
And Hacksaw Ridge is sort of, for me, falls into the Hidden Figures or Jackie category.
Standard...
Kind of standard stuff that you would never remember in many prior years, you know? Like, it's a pretty typical, like, anti-war movie, which is fine. It's not anything that's offensive. Like, you could see it and enjoy it.
Gotcha.
Garfield was fine. He was better in Silence, but, you know, whatever.
Okay. Let's go with this.
Silence snubbed all over the place.
You know what? Let's talk about that, because I know that, you know, obviously it's directed by Scorsese, but not one mention of Silence in any of the nominations and everything that you
got
saw.
Got one nomination, I think, for cinematography.
You're absolutely, yes, you're correct.
One single nomination for the movie.
Along with Arrival, La La Land, Lion, and Moonlight.
Yeah, all the other stuff from all the other categories.
Yeah.
It's weird about Silence, it's like we've been hearing about this movie for, feels like 10 years we've been hearing about him wanting to make this movie. And I know it's longer than that he's been trying to make it.
Yeah.
And it finally comes out and it's like, nobody goes to see it.
Right.
People that went to see it, not that nuts about it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one nomination. It's like Kundun, you know?
Well, hey. Kundun. I feel like Chris from The Sopranos, like pointing out Scorsese, like, yo, I love Kundun.
I love Kundun.
Yeah. Just run down. Let's see. Best documentary feature, my number one, OJ Made in America, which didn't get a nomination for Best Picture, but that's in there. I'm pretty sure that's a lock.
Eh, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Documentaries. I'm on board with that, too, by the way. Like, if you're a documentary, you're in the documented category. If you're an animated movie, you're in the animated category.
Right.
Like, La La Land doesn't get another category to compete in for picture, you know what I mean?
No, of course. While you mentioned it, best animated feature film, Kubo and the Two Strings, Moana, or Mona.
Yeah, Mona.
My Life as a Zucchini. Sure.
Like, every year there's one movie in this category, you're like, what?
The Red Turtle and Zootopia.
The other thing about this category is every year it's like, yeah, those were the animated movies that came out. Like, you know, I mean, not a lot of surprises in this category.
I mean,
other than the zucchini thing.
There's no Pixar movie in here.
Kubo and the Zucchini. So, was there a Pixar movie released?
I'm pretty sure, yeah, there was, yeah.
What was it? Oh, Finding Dory.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, it's...
But, you know, they're Disney, not on... Disney's got two, so...
No, of course. A couple of the things that were of interest. Best foreign language film... Land of Mine, which I tried watching, but it didn't have subtitles. A Man Called Ove. The Salesman. The Salesman is interesting because apparently the director of that movie is not going to be allowed into the United States due to our lovely president's recent executive order.
Due to the travel ban.
Yeah.
That is not a ban on Muslims.
Right.
And
so
frankly, it's not a ban on Muslims because it doesn't include all the countries in the Arab world that Donald Trump does business in. So
or that were involved with 9/11.
Because it's not a Muslim ban.
Yeah, but he is from Iran and they were one of the countries, and so go figure.
Man, if you thought the Meryl Streep speech at the Golden Globes was like, that was pretty much like, there was a couple Trump jokes and stuff, but that was the only like high horse soapbox moment, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
that I remember. Because it was pretty fucking hot. That was a big fucking horse. Like, I mean, she was way up there on that horse.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, there's booze involved, too, which also...
And there's booze, yes. But I actually think no booze is going to make it worse.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, you get a little Jack Daniels in you, and you're like, ah, fuck Trump.
Yeah, yeah,
Deadpool
yeah.
was great. You know, like, you know. But if you don't, and you're all cramped up and stuff, and you get up there, I think you're going to be... I think you're going to have a lot of soapboxing going on.
Yeah. Best Makeup and Hairstyling, Suicide Squad.
Ugh,
got a nomination for their fucking piece of shit movie.
Poor Deadpool. Like, everything makes no sense in this entire world, and I want to kill myself.
Yeah.
Like, Suicide Squad
is
now an Academy Award nominated.
Academy Award nominated Suicide Squad.
And for hairdo. Like, what the fuck?
Because I wrote Damaged on my forehead.
Hairdo?
Yeah. And makeup. Don't forget
makeup.
Fucking
dyed Leto's hair green and fucking slapped some baby powder on his face? You know, Mr. Echo from Lost is wearing a crocodile suit? Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
I don't know. I have no idea. But
holy shit!
I mean, it didn't get nominated for visual effects because Deepwater Horizon, Doctor Strange, The Jungle Book, Kubo and the Two Strings, and Rogue One got nominated.
They didn't get a nomination. Suicide Squad didn't get a nomination for the, Trash Cloud
at the very end
that she's like brewing up in the sky.
Yeah, the Enchantress.
No sense whatsoever.
The Enchantress, you know, I just poured like eyeliner and a bucket of water on her head, and there she is.
That's
She's the Enchantress.
That's the Enchantress.
Adapted screenplay: Arrival, Fences, Hidden Figures, Lion, and Moonlight.
God, I'm getting deja vu here.
Original screenplay: Hell or High Water, La La Land, The Lobster.
Yeah. Ugh, Jesus.
Manchester by the Sea. Oh, and 20th Century Women.
Yeah, that was
there's your
nomination it got.
There you go.
Which I would argue that Benning made it better, but, you know.
Of course.
But
you have strong feelings about The Lobster, though.
Did you see The Lobster?
No, but I love... Just take into account on the real thing on morelikeradio.com how weird that sentence just sounded like. So you have problems with The Lobster, right?
Did you see The Lobster? Wow, The Lobster sucked ass.
Oh, jeez.
Like, super high concept, like, somebody... You know what it feels like? It feels like somebody was like, I want to write a Charlie Kaufman script.
Aww.
Like, that's exactly what The Lobster is.
Okay.
And I guarantee you that was the genesis of The Lobster.
Okay.
Which is a better title, by the way. The Genesis of the Lobster.
Genesis of the Lobster.
No, that's what it is. It's like, you know, this guy in, you know, sort of dystopian society in the future where... If you're not married by a certain age, then you go off to this resort and you have, you know, a month to meet someone and marry them. Or you get turned into the animal of your choosing. Like,
okay.
Yeah, I'm dead serious. Yeah.
Okay, well.
And there's lots of weird violence and sort of, like, undertones about society and all sorts of things like that. Really fucking heavy-handed. Not funny.
Yeah.
Definitely not funny. Sort of entertaining only because you're kind of watching it like...
What's
fucking happening here? How did this get made?
Colin Farrell doesn't save it at all?
Colin Farrell is the one sort of saving grace in the movie, because Colin Farrell's fucking good in anything,
of course.
Like, he's even good in something like...
Fantastic Beasts?
Fantastic Beasts, oh, wicked.
Yeah.
Even though he seemed bored as fuck. Yeah, but no, Lobster getting a best screenplay nomination. What the fuck? Again, Deadpool. I wasn't on the Deadpool bandwagon until I saw the nominations. And then I was like...
Just give him one.
Jesus Christ, we should have given Deadpool something.
Just one.
God.
Anything? Okay.
Deadpool comes on TV, I watch it, and I laugh every time.
If you were to give it a nomination, what would you give it a nomination for?
I mean, I'd give it a nomination for screenplay. You know,
screenplay?
I mean, it is a funny, funny screenplay.
Yeah.
Comedy is underrated, and our friend Johnny Kelly online was starting this conversation, and he's got a good point.
Yeah.
Now, he agreed with my point, which is they don't make a lot of good comedies, but Deadpool was a comedy, which, again, was his counterpoint.
Right.
Like, Deadpool has some action in it, but the action's not what people remember about Deadpool. It's not what I remember.
It's the little hand caressing.
It's the little hand, and, you know, like, all the bickering back and forth. Even the romance between he and his wife in the movie is genuinely sweet and believable. Like, it's a memorable movie, everything about the movie. And I, like I said, I wasn't part of the whole fanboy movement to get Deadpool Oscar nominated.
Right.
But now, like, retroactively, I'm like somebody that voted for Jill Stein that, like, retroactively is marching on Washington here. Like, I don't fucking want Deadpool to get a nomination.
Well, you know, we were also telling Johnny, too, that you saw Manchester by the Sea, and sure. It's a drama, but it's got good comedy elements in it as well as Hell or High Water. So, Johnny Kelly, watch both of those movies.
Well, he's making the argument, and it's common, and it's true, you know, the Oscars are uppity and hoity-toity, and, you know, a lot of movies that most of the country doesn't give a fuck about, like Moonlight, you know, like things like that. Whereas the movies the country does give a shit about, i.e. Deadpool and things like that, or Dark Knight, are never mentioned. Or they're relegated to sound effects editing or something. They're like, oh, okay, fucking great.
Yeah.
You know, Rogue One, which I'm not a, you know, great lover of, but
it's gonna
biggest
win.
Fucking movie of the year.
That's going to win that category,
is
right?
Only in those categories. I can only assume that Rogue One is going to win those types of things.
Sure.
But those categories are always so weird and unpredictable for me.
Yeah, it's true.
And don't forget that I think La La Land is now nominated, because it's a musical, is nominated in some of those types of categories, you know.
Let's look. Man, for everything. I'm telling you. Original screenplay. Sound mixing. Sound editing.
There you go.
Production design. Two songs were nominated for original song.
Crazy. What were the two songs? Does it say?
Audition, The Fools Who Dream. I want to say it's the one that she's... right before she goes to Paris.
Oh, okay.
And it cans out of that.
Oh, yeah.
And then City of Stars.
City of Stars.
Original score. Film editing.
God dang.
Yeah. Directing. Costume design. Cinematography. And then, obviously, actor, actress, and picture.
Yeah.
So.
Overall, 2016, what do you rate it, like, for movies? Scale of 1 to 10.
Six.
We look back in history, what is 2016?
6.
You give it a 6.
It's kind of weak.
I think it's a pretty weak year. I think we've been in a weak, like, couple of years.
Sure.
Do you think this gets turned around with the current, like, political climate?
Absolutely.
Things like that?
I think it'll...
It's usually what happens, right?
Yeah, I think it'll kind of, you know, have a... It'll provide fodder to make more controversial, more charged up fare. So that, you know, it doesn't have to be a political slant or any of that type of thing. But, you know, when things like this happen and people get, you know, all riled up and obviously join the internet and see the vitriol that's being spewed, you know, from one side
or
another.
Nobody doesn't know what you're talking about, right?
No one knows what the hell I'm talking
about.
We're
not just talking about Donald Trump. We're talking about all the issues that are going on. The Black Lives Matter, everything with the Brexit, and everything that's happening over the entire world.
Yeah.
It seems like everything's boiling up, you know?
And if not in 2017, definitely in 2018, I think you'd start to see, like, a
probably
lot
too
more.
Soon in 17.
Yeah. So, but as far as this movie season, this movie year is concerned, like, not the best.
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Is there any movie, like, I mean, we did our top 10 of the year, but, like, is there any movie of all those nominations that in 10 years you're going to be telling someone, you know, they got to see?
Just the movies for Best Picture, right?
Yeah. Like,
I could see myself going back to, and again, I'm only going back to the four movies that I've seen.
Yeah.
I would probably go back to Hell or High Water or Arrival.
Yeah.
So,
I feel the same way. La La Land
is good, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good for this year, and then I don't have to watch it ever again. But, you know, Hell or High Water, it's got its moments. Arrival, I feel like, you know, there's a lot of things that you would be able to catch on a second viewing.
No doubt.
So,
yeah. I'm actually really excited to see Arrival again for that reason.
Yeah. So, as we wrap up on the Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, it is time once again, Chris, time once again for your segment, which is known as
Significant Deaths.
We actually had two that it was kind of sudden. And that's always...
Death goes that way.
Yeah, right? Miguel Ferrer, whose mother is Rosemary Clooney? Is that true? No way.
He's cousins with George Clooney?
Miguel Ferrer, who followed his mother, Rosemary Clooney, and his Academy Award-winning father, Jose, into acting and often portrayed lawmen.
His dad was Jose Ferrer.
Died on Thursday, the week of January 20th.
So he's George Clooney's cousin?
Yeah.
That's weird as shit.
He was 61, died of cancer.
Oof.
Was noted recently for playing Owen Granger in NCIS Los Angeles, but he was also in Twin Peaks. He was also Bob Morton.
Bob Morton.
I'm cashing you out, Bob.
I'm cashing you out, Bob.
And he was in RoboCop. He was one of the smarmiest actors that you could get. If you wanted to play an asshole or have somebody play an asshole in your movie or a television show, like, he would probably be it, right?
Oh, he was so smarmy.
Yeah.
But he was also just good at playing, yeah, smarmy, but more sleazeball, you know? Like in Traffic. Remember him in Traffic?
Oh, yeah.
Sleazeball. Just such
this
a
is coercion. Ball. Oh, coercion. That's a real big word for a fisherman. I have another word. Immunity.
Yeah. Such a sleazeball. That's his appeal in RoboCop.
You know?
He's Bob, but he's fucking sleazeball.
I never saw the...
Two hookers with the coke and stuff.
Just bitches leave.
Bitches leave.
He was also in the 2004 remake of The Manchurian Candidate, directed by Jonathan Demme.
Good movie.
He was in Iron Man 3. He was in a bunch of stuff, though, obviously. So, significant death number one. Significant death number two, John Hurt, who actually died this past Friday and had garnered Oscar nominations for The Midnight Express and The Elephant Man. He died at age of 77. No other details as far as his passing is concerned, but I know that there was a picture that I saw today where he played whatever the character's name is in the Harry Potter movies, and there was several hundred people pointing their
wands. Sold them their fucking wands or whatever.
Yeah. So
this is the weird thing about people dying. It's like all these people are pointing their wands at the screen because John Hurt died, and all of us that are older than... that are not fucking teenage wizard fans are like
did he
what?
Did he die of a chest burster coming out? Because he died
an
alien.
Is it a chest burster or did V actually drive a sword through his heart?
I want everyone to remember what we need now. God, that movie's great. V for Vendetta.
Also... Sorry, I just had to play that for
not
you.
Yeah, 2 minutes.
No, but also, he's in Jackie. I was watching Jackie.
Okay.
And then he died the next fucking day.
Oof.
And I was watching Jackie.
Yeah.
And he's sort of walking with her in a scene. He's in a pretty small part in the movie.
Okay.
Plays like a priest that she's sort of talking to because she's going through all this stuff with her husband getting his head blown off and shit like that.
Okay.
But I'm watching him walking down in the scene. I'm like, man, John Hurt looks winded. Like, he looks old and frail and winded. Like, he was clearly out of breath and, like, barely able to say his lines.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, man, this motherfucker looks old. Next day, John Hurt, dead.
Yikes.
Yeah, one of the most iconic scenes of all time. Like, a lot of people don't know who John Hurt is, and I know the kids are pointing their wands at the screen and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But one of the most iconic movie scenes of all time.
Yes. In fact, if you go into any YouTube horror movie compilation... that's the one that they use. They don't use any other ones from the Alien series but that one. So.
No. I mean, we're talking earlier about M. Night Shyamalan and twists and surprise moments. And, Sixth Sense has one of the great oh shit moments in the history of film.
Yeah.
You'd be hard-pressed to find a more oh shit moment than the chestburster scene from the first Alien.
Yeah.
Can you fucking imagine? Like, I feel like I saw the movie, that scene in a clip before I saw the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And a lot of people, that's probably the case.
And then he reprised that role, the exact same scene, in Spaceballs.
Hello, my baby! Hello, my honey! Hello, my ragtime gal!
Oh, no. Not again. Jeez. He was also in Rob Roy in 1995. V for Vendetta, obviously, in 2006.
No.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy in 2011. He was in the Hellboy movies.
Fuck yeah, he was.
He was in Lord of the Rings.
Was he in both of them? I thought he was just in the first one. But it doesn't matter.
Yeah. He was in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Wait a minute, did you say he was in Lord of the Rings?
He was in Lord of the Rings. The animated version of Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay, alright.
Yeah, provided his voice.
My fucking nerd antenna whip. Fucking alarm started going off. Error, human.
And he was also in a version of 1984.
Yes. Well, I think there's only one.
Yeah.
And not a great movie, unfortunately. Like, one of the great books of all time. But, yep, he was in it.
No, but I mention that because the last thing that I will mention for our show today, The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, is that, obviously, you and I have seen the movie Watchmen.
Yep.
And it was...
I love it.
I love it, too. Long, but I love it. Phrasing. So, So what I would say is that the clock that they use, the representative clock that
Doomsday
they...
Clock.
The Doomsday clock, where it's at a certain time, a couple minutes to midnight, that is where it, you know, collects, coalesces into where we're at in the world as far as issues and fears and all that type of thing.
Yeah.
And the actual Doomsday clock in present time, in reality, was moved 30 seconds closer to midnight because of all this crap that's happening with Trump. Yeah. So we will leave you with Take a Bow by Muse from the Watchmen soundtrack.
Ooh,
and so,
yeah.
Chris Whetton, always a pleasure.
Yes, this was fun.
It was fun. And so as we continue throughout the month, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be watching more movies, dealing with the Oscar nominations. And so please follow us on Facebook and Twitter, TheReelThingNLR. But obviously our Facebook profile and our page is needing your support. And we always thank you. Hippo Juice is coming up next. Have a good week.